And you're very welcome back to Lifeline. Now I should be joined on the line by Sinead Keating. Good morning to Sinead.
Hi Debbie, thank you so much for having me on.
You're very welcome. Now Sinead, you're an ambassador with Sea Change, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Green Ribbon and the work that is done within Sea Change, and a little bit about your own story. And we know you've had twins, so congratulations through this pandemic.
Thank you.
And how your experience was. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with Sea Change.
I came to Sea Change a few years ago, and I had always been aware of their Green Ribbon campaign, and I asked if I could be an ambassador. I love that Sea Change, with their Green Ribbon campaign, really puts ambassadors at the centre of the work that they're doing, which is so important, because we're all people with experiences of mental health issues, with our own personal stories, and that has to be at the centre of any kind of mental health conversation. We can't just be having a conversation that's focused around the services or the voices from professionals, which are really important, but we have to hear from people who have lived experiences. We're the ones with the health issues, we're the ones who go through the services and know what's there and what's not there.
Exactly. So tell us a little bit about your own story.
I have bipolar disorder type 2, which I think is the lesser known type of bipolar. Often when people think of bipolar, they'll know bipolar type 1, which is the form of the illness that has a huge highs and quite deep lows that are very separated. And bipolar type 2, the highs aren't so high. I have what's called hypomania, which is where my brain functions too quickly, but I won't have such extreme highs that people around me would be really, really worried, or I wouldn't have psychosis or anything. So it can be a little bit more subtle and a little bit harder to diagnose. But I can say I was lucky that I had my first experience at 11. I don't know what I call it, lucky, but it did lead to me having a diagnosis much earlier in my life. I was eventually diagnosed when I was 21. And I think that the 20s are such a dodgy time for most people anyway. You're trying to find yourself and who you are and what you want to do. And at least I had my diagnosis and I could sort that out at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I know, just saying, Sinead, just to for listeners here today, we have done a lot of interviews with Sea Change over the years, and we have had a lot of ambassadors on talking about what you're talking about today. And as you said, you know, you got your diagnosis quite young, which was good. But there's people for years and years go through the system and they're not been... they're not been told, they're not getting the help they need. As you mentioned, there's numbers and there's charities, and the charities do great work, which we all know.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are just kind of left to deal with their own mental health on their own.
Well, that's actually, you just hit the nail on the head there. There is a huge amount of focus on personal responsibility when it comes to mental ill health, in a way that I don't think we require of anybody with a physical illness. You know, if you had anything from asthma to cancer, you would not be expected to go and figure out how to cope with that by yourself. But there is an awful lot of personal responsibility, so that the individual has to figure out a way to manage their day-to-day symptoms. And yes, of course, the individual is the only person who can say what's going on with them. And so in that way, you're the expert in yourself. But we need to have more services. So I think the thing that sticks out for me this year in particular is that we can't anymore just do campaigns that are about telling people to ask for help, because help isn't there. So I, as you said, had twins in the middle of lockdown, which was great because they were so well, but wasn't fantastic, as it isn't for most parents having babies during lockdown, because we had the whole no visitors and people couldn't see them, and that was all really hard. But the thing that came up for me was that when I did become really unwell, and I did when they were just over 10 weeks old, I had to make a choice about going into hospital or not. And that was made way more complicated by the fact that there are no psychiatric units in Ireland where new mums can go with their babies. That just does not exist in Ireland.
I thought now at this day and age you could, there would be something.
You would think that,
there would be some hospital that you can bring, especially as you said, you were a new mother after having going through all this, especially in the time we're in as well. Really, I thought now that we would be more up to date with things like that and bringing your baby in. So what happens if you're breastfeeding and you would just have to detach yourself. You had to get help and go to hospital.
Yeah. And with the pandemic as well, you can only have, I think at the time, this would have been when I was thinking about going to hospital, as my girls were born at the start of May, since it would have been mid-July, and we were just at the stage where restrictions were slightly more relaxed. But you were still only allowed one visitor one time a day. So breastfeeding's out the window. Now, that hadn't, I hadn't been breastfeeding because I knew I couldn't go through the sleep deprivation for my mental health. But, yeah, if you went to the UK, there are wards or hospitals where women can go with their babies so that you don't break the bond, but that the mum is still getting the psychiatric help that she needs.
Don't she, prisons have a mother and baby unit, don't they?
Pardon?
The prisons here in Ireland have a mother and baby unit. So why can't the hospitals have
it? Oh, I'm delighted to hear that. If they do, I don't know.
Well, as far as I know, no, I could be wrong, but I'm sure they did. I'm sure your baby's allowed to go with you. So why don't the hospitals, if a parent has, you know, said you needed the help, and did you go into hospital or did you not?
I didn't. I've been in hospital before. I have had a couple of inpatient stays. And so I suppose in that way it was great that I wasn't frightened of the idea of going into hospital. That would have been really overwhelming if I was a new mum looking at being separated from her babies for the first time to go into hospital. But I knew what to expect, so that fear wasn't in the way. But I did not want to leave my girls. I didn't want to leave my husband by himself with our girls. I didn't want to have the break for the bond with them. And I ultimately thought actually it would be worse for my mental health. So we were just lucky that we could put out the call to my family and a friend and say, please help us, it's an emergency. And they did. My sister-in-law came and took them for 2 days, and my friend came and moved in with us for the weekend. But nobody should have to face that type of choice.
No, definitely not. And did you, you're talking to me today, so I presume you got through this, you said, with the help from family and friends. But it could have been the other way. I mean, your mental health could have gone quite down, and all because you couldn't be with your babies in hospital.
Yeah, and you know, it did. It went to a place where it hadn't been before, and I had my first ever suicidal thought.
Really?
Now, I've had my illness for 22 years, and I've never had a suicidal thought before. So that was a whole frightening new experience to have. And it was all related to sleep deprivation. And I knew that at some point I might get really sick. Because you can't escape the sleep deprivation when you're a new parent, but like that it is so dangerous with bipolar.
And Sinead, and we've... sorry for interrupting you there. Just listening over the last couple of weeks, something came up on the radio of a woman being pregnant in hospital, and she was having pains before she had a threatened miscarriage. But she had a terrible experience through this pandemic where, you know, she had to go in on her own. And we've all heard that new mothers to be the first, probably pregnant on the first baby, to go in to get scans on their own. Maybe the husband, the partner can come in for an hour when they're given, when they're delivering the baby. It's really, must be a really frightening experience for anybody, but people who are suffering with mental health issues must be 10 times worse for them.
Just the 2 weeks before my daughters were born, I was so intensely anxious, and I think that I was so fortunate just that I had been in touch with the mental health midwife at the Coombe where I gave birth, and she was magnificent. So I was able to ring her and say, I'm really concerned for my own mental health. I knew I was having a C-section. I had no idea what my reaction to that was going to be. And I said, I need my husband. And so she was able to advocate for me. And that was a really, really important service that made such a big difference to me, especially during the pandemic. And I think that it's not just for people with pre-existing mental health conditions who are having their first babies, particularly during the lockdown. But if you have a pre-existing mental health issue, it's just so difficult because, well, for me, that was my biggest concern. I was very fortunate. My girls were fine, but I knew at some point I was not going to be fine. And so I needed to try and prep for that. But, you know, and that was really just a scramble every day to see how I was and to take the help that we could get.
Sinead, you knew beforehand, before you were even gave birth to the girls, that you probably would need help. So did you get help before actually giving birth with your mental health?
So because I have my illness a long time, I knew that pregnancy would be quite risky for me, for my mental health. Myself and my husband went for a consultation with a perinatal psychiatrist before we even started trying for a baby.
Oh, nice.
And that was great because we were able to talk through my options. I take some medication. I wanted to know what the options were about that. And we spoke about the fact that all of my risks are immediately after birth. And really the first 6 weeks, you know, as it turned out, my health deteriorated after that. But it was great to have that time to plan.
Yeah.
And so even when I was pregnant, I went to see the perinatal psychiatrist before I even went for a scan because I was referred at the same time. And it was really important for me to know that I had the mental health care alongside the maternity care, because bipolar for me, by far and away, the biggest risk in pregnancy. And I'd say I was, there's not too many women with bipolar having twins in a pandemic. it was probably an insular experience, but God. I'm glad
and the
I got
girls,
through it.
They're perfect. And what's the names?
Lyra and Fia.
Lovely. And everything went okay with them?
Everything went really well.
Brilliant. And so tell me then, Sinead, with being an ambassador for Sea Change and been pregnant through this pandemic, you said you did get the help with the psychiatric nurse. But for people who are experiencing some sort of mental health issue, and it's quite frightening, you know, as I've done so many interviews with people, their one fear is they have nowhere to turn to in an emergency. As you said, if you have an asthma attack or something, you can go to the A&E in a local hospital. But there's no dedicated A&E for mental health here in Ireland.
Yes.
And an ordinary A&E in a big hospital isn't a place to be for somebody who is suffering with mental health.
Definitely not. I'm really fortunate that I haven't had to go to A&E with my mental health myself. But I've been in A&E with a physical issue while there was somebody else having a mental ill health issue in A&E. And it was horrific to hear. It's so clearly not the place to send somebody when they're having a mental ill health crisis. It's not the environment. The doctors and nurses we have in A&E, as we all know, are so overworked and so overrun, and there's not the time to give the emotional support that somebody needs. And we also know that so many people are discharged even when they come in and maybe they just had a suicide attempt or they have self-harmed. They're just patched up and sent home because there are no beds. And so there are so many different issues within our health system that we don't have a dedicated mental health A&E, that we have a two-tier system between public and private, which there is a big difference. So when I said before I've been to hospital, that's a private hospital, which I feel massively privileged because I have health insurance, and that's enormous. I would not want to go into a ward in a public hospital. Apart from anything, it's such a small thing, but the smell. When you walk into a dedicated psychiatric hospital, it doesn't smell like a general hospital. No. And it's funny how small things like that make a huge difference to how you feel by being in an environment, especially if you have to be there for, you know, days or weeks at a time. We don't have services that will effectively support somebody who's having a mental ill health issue and an addiction to a dual diagnosis. We are taking children directly from child services the moment they turn 18 and put them directly into adult services with no, you know, with no very widespread, very organised catchment for young adult care.
Yeah.
There's so many gaps
where
people themselves and their families are expected to do the lifting, obviously with very often with no information, no experience in dealing with it, and it's really traumatic.
It's a disgrace, really, because as you said, from a young adult to go into maybe a psychiatric hospital with older people there, frightening enough, but then to be kind of there, not knowing what's happening, there has to be that gap for that young adult, you know, from 18 up to whatever, 25, 26. And for people as well, the help they need, as you said, you're lucky enough to have private health insurance and you could go and get the help.
Lucky.
But people who don't have it, you know, we've all heard the stories. They go to A&E, they're sent home, and next you know, they're probably found dead or, you know, back in again. And there just needs to be more done. As we was talking off air, Sinead, we were saying there's so many organisations doing great work and giving out numbers. And, but we need hands on now. We need people there, especially through this time, to help, to be there, to, like they say, action speaks louder than words. That's what we need.
I think there's an awful lot of gaps. I often think that, first of all, we rely quite heavily on our charity services, some of which get some HSE support, but also have to do a huge amount of fundraising. And those charities are amazing and they do such wonderful work, but not all of them can offer professional help. So if you ring a helpline, it's more often going to give you a lot of empathy and support and signpost you to the services that you may need. But if the services aren't there, a helpline can only do so much.
Yeah.
So that's what was making me think about campaigns that will say, just ask for help, just start the conversation. And that may help somebody who's having a mild to moderate experience of perhaps depression and anxiety, which are very important to talk about. They are not less important at all. They are not the entirety of the conversation. So within the ambassador program in Sea Change, you know, there are those with bipolar, schizophrenia, borderline personality disorder, chronic depression, eating disorders. It's a very diverse group of experiences. And we're not going to always be helped by just have a chat.
Yeah.
Because we're far beyond that. So you need all those things. You need the A&E need the emergency room for mental ill health. You need the dual diagnosis support. We need proper eating disorder care. It's not enough to just say, have a conversation.
No. I think really we really need an A&E for a dedicated A&E for mental health. I think that's one thing that really needs to be done as soon as possible. We were bad enough before with the numbers going up so high. I don't know what's going to be like through all this pandemic and after, but we need extra. Definitely, as you said, there is gaps and they need to be filled. And definitely, I think that's one of the things that they should be looking into now, is getting an A&E, because it isn't a nice place for people to have to go in a big hospital overrun. But Sinead, listen, thanks a million for talking to us today and giving us your time and your story. And I hope you're doing well now, and the babies, as you said, are doing great. So that's good. But for people who are listening today and feel like you, that they needed help, where would their first port of call be? Did they ring Sea Change or one of the organisations like PH House?
So I always think if you're not sure what's going on and you just feel that there's something wrong, talk to somebody you trust.
Yeah.
So it's not just about talking to anybody. Pick somebody that you really trust. If that person isn't within your family, your friend circle, ring Samaritans, ring Aware. PH House obviously is there for people who are feeling suicidal or who are self-harming. Samaritans will support people and signpost people with any type of mental ill health difficulty, and I always think Samaritans are a great resource to give to somebody when you don't know what the context is, because they'll be able to signpost you on. And that's just the first step. So just to get yourself some support so that you can move on. And whether that's going to talk to your GP, to be referred into mental health care, whether you are feeling suicidal and you want to go to PH House, try and get an appointment there. But the first thing to do is, if you haven't told anybody, do tell somebody that you trust.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that person, ring the Samaritans. The number is 116 123. Which I always know off the top of my head, and to tell anybody, they're there 24/7.
And for people who are pregnant through this pandemic, and probably the first time, not even, maybe could be the second or third pregnancy, but it's quite a frightening time. There is help for people as well, you know, in the I suppose maternity hospitals, if they suffer with a mental health.
Yes.
Yeah, they can get help.
So their
well.
Maternity perinatal mental health care has moved on quite a lot. There was very little in 2017 when I went for that first consultation, and now there's a lot. There are a lot more perinatal psychiatrists within each hospital. And as I said, in the Coombe, there was a mental health midwife who was fantastic. If you're feeling upset, I would say, if you're feeling really anxious, if you're feeling really low, first port of call is the GP. and ask them, and they can refer you to the mental health team within the hospital if that's what's best for you.
Okay.
But hopefully, I would love to see at some stage in the future that we get better, even with peer support to do within maternity mental health care. And I know there are a lot of women around the country who are doing their best to support each other, but from a state-funded point of view, it would be amazing to see something that is much more structured and widely available.
Exactly. Anyway, thanks a million, Sinead, for talking to us today. And
you not at all, my pleasure.
Okay, we'll talk to you again very soon, okay?
Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you. Bye. Bye-bye, Sinead.
Bye.
And that was Sinead Keating, who is an ambassador with Sea Change, talking about her own mental health and her experience being pregnant and having twins, two lovely little girls. As she mentioned, the number for the Samaritans is 116 123. That's 116 123. If you feel you need to talk to somebody, there is someone there at the end of the line.